It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 11th of May, 2023. Welcome along to another edition of the 9 to noon show. And I do, of course, hope that you're all very well indeed. And hopefully you're involved in the programme today, as so many of you always are. Even if you've never texted a radio show before, get your views on air here on your local radio station. You WhatsApp and text us to 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. And it's about things that are important to you as well. So if you're listening and there's something that you want to talk about, it can be in the positive or the negative, you know, don't think no one else is interested. Contact us and talk to us, and we'll see what we can do to platform or help or whatever might be required. Did I say 07491 25,000 is how you get through to Caroline and Niamh working on the show today? And of course, emails to comments at highlandradio.com. You're more than welcome to, if you choose to, join the 500,000 live minutes viewed every single month across our social media. 500,000 minutes viewed of this show on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, or across our Facebook pages, or by clicking live, clicking watch live on our website, and get involved that way as well. It's a Thursday, so as you know, it's a bumper morning for newspapers. So let's see what's making the headlines today. Let's start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. MICA group forces Fianna Fáil to listen up. That was the scene on Monday evening in Letterkenny when a deputation from the MICA campaign confronted Fianna Fáil's leading lights at the community centre and successfully forced their way to the top of the agenda. Leading MICA campaigner Paddy Diver said the silence from the Fianna Fáil top table was notable, given that a mother of three children addressed the politicians about her dire circumstances. She is not in the MICA scheme, but her house is crumbling and she's got nowhere to go. She emptied her heart out at that meeting and left in tears, Mr. Diver said. Paddy Diver told the Tribune, that there is no sign of the government parties making the absolute essential changes required to the defective blocks redress scheme. The Donegal Democrat reports on life-changing injuries for a Garda in drug dealer chase. A Garda suffered serious neck and back injuries while giving chase to a Donegal drug dealer who was attempting to evade arrest while in possession of over €17,000 worth of cocaine. Detective Sergeant Jerry Farry was dragged through a hedge and plunged 5 feet into a field as he attempted to apprehend Robert Orr on April 12th last year, or 2021, I beg your pardon. Orr, who has 56 previous convictions, will be sentenced on Friday after pleading guilty to the possession of a controlled drug with the intention of selling it or otherwise supplying it to others. The Donegal News covers a story which has gained massive traction locally and nationally, of course. A Donegal man who abandoned his partially dressed 2-year-old child on a road in Letterkenny at 5 a.m. has been jailed for 3 years at the circuit court sitting in Letterkenny on Tuesday. Judge John Aylmer, passing sentence, said the father had exposed the infant to extreme dangers of all kinds. The man, who cannot be named to protect the identity of that child, pleaded guilty to child cruelty for exposing the child to a significant risk of death or injury in what was a premeditated act. Garda Sergeant Frank McDade had previously detailed to the district court the events of the early hours of August 8th, 2020, when two men returning from a night out on hearing a child crying were shocked to find the child, who was wearing socks and no shoes, holding a bottle outside a construction site at Thorn Road at 5 a.m. The two men knocked on nearby doors, but no one identified the child as theirs. They thought that he had just wandered out. As it turned out, then contact was made with the guard station. The child was collected, and then the mother collected the child, I believe. The Derry News this morning. The increasing challenges faced by doctors working in general practice across the Foyle area were discussed at an event facilitated by the Derry GP Federation. Local GPs came together at the event, which took place on April 25th, to share learning on surviving this difficult time. On to the Irish Independent now, and name and shame threat for profiteering supermarkets. Supermarkets that price gouge could be named and shamed under plans being examined by the government. Enterprise Minister Simon Coveney is developing a suite of measures aimed at ensuring that major retailers are not profiting from customers by keeping food prices high despite inflation slowing down. He's examining whether to introduce new reporting mechanism for companies that would require them to detail margins they're making on certain products. Mr. Coveney is also considering plans to force retailers to reveal specific profits they make from Irish customers, even if businesses are based in other countries. It's about more transparency around who's making what margin and ensuring that the customers are getting a fair deal here, he told the Irish Independent. And as we mentioned on the show last week, wasn't it? We've got the farmers who create an awful lot of the produce we're talking about, not the dry goods, you know, the milk, the cheese, the butter, the bread, what have you. And then you have the retailer that sells it. But what goes on in between? How much money are they making? How much money is the factories making? So maybe a bit more transparency would help. And it might even help the farming community, who they themselves, I'm sure, are very worried that any reductions that the supermarkets are making at the moment, we've seen milk come down, butter come down, bread coming down, that it is the farmer or the producer that's going to end up carrying the can on that. On to the Irish Times now, and the coalition is coming under pressure from government TDs over plans to put aside large sums of money in a multi-billion euro fund designed to protect the economy from future shocks. That's the rainy day fund, okay? So that's language we are familiar with. Minister for Finance Michael McGrath has announced plans to channel part of an expected 65 billion euro budget surplus into a long-term public sector savings vehicle. According to an options paper drawn up for the government, up to 90 billion in windfall corporation tax revenues could be put into the new fund by 2030, although the government has yet to decide exactly how much to set aside. There is resistance growing among backbench TDs, however, who feel there should be more of a focus on assisting households struggling with cost of living pressures at present. In the options paper, Mr. McGrath said that in headline terms, it is fair to say that our public finances are currently in a sweet spot. A large budgetary surplus was recorded last year, and assuming no major shock to the economy, my department is projecting an expansion of the surplus in the years ahead. So it's not just last year, this year and next year. He expects this corporate tax cash cow to continue, but instead of, and I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do, but instead of actually maybe dragging the 200,000 children out of poverty that currently live in it, we are going to be putting it away for a rainy day. On to the Farmers' Journal, their lead story. Limousine cattle have the lowest daily methane emissions, initial results from a groundbreaking Irish research project have found. Early results from a 3 million 5 euro study at the Irish Cattle Breeding Federation Performance Test Centre in Kildare found that limousine sired cattle performed best from an emissions perspective while not compromising weight gain. Their farts and burps are least toxic, it seems. Cementiel and Hereford sired cattle had the highest daily emissions of the breed studied. The pioneering green breed research project is headed by Chagask's Professor Donna Berry and involves the ICBF Chagask and the Department of Agriculture. Going on to the red top tabloids now, and this is a, I don't know really how much one can comment on this because it is a case that's going before the courts. Suffice to say, I did raise my eyebrows and would have an awful lot to say on it, really. The Irish Daily Mail, a Garda is to face a criminal prosecution over his driving in relation to an incident in which three men were killed in a collision 2 years ago while fleeing Gardaí. Dublin District Coroner's Court heard the DPP has directed a Garda involved in the pursuit at the three males, who were members of a Tallaght-based criminal gang that specialised in burglaries, is to be charged with a driving offence. The three victims were killed instantly when their BMW vehicle burst into flames following a head-on crash with a truck on the N7 between City West and Baldonnell on July 7th in 2021 while they were driving on the wrong side of the carriageway. We're going to do a little bit more on that story later on in the programme to try and get a little bit more detail on that, so stay tuned for that. The Irish Daily Star, Finance Minister Michael McGrath has welcomed a court ruling forcing a financial services company to halve the mortgage rate it was charging a distressed borrower. This is important for any of you out there, I think, with Pepper Finance to keep an eye on this, because there is some good advice one can follow. In fact, we might chase down a PIP on this to see how, if you are in this position, it might be able to benefit you. Because there are means and ways that you could try and achieve the same outcome this couple did. Pepper Finance will now be locked into a fixed rate of 2.5% for the next 25 years on the loan of over €280,000. It comes after Judge Mary O'Malley Costello gave the green light to a personal insolvency agreement for a couple at a sitting at Tullamore Circuit Court. I believe that loan owners and mortgage providers should be offered fixed rate options to their borrowers, Michael McGrath said. He said that under the Code of Conduct on Mortgage Arrears, lenders are only required to consider alternative repayment arrangements and are not required to look at their options, including fixed rates. So this couple got a very good deal in the end, 2.5% over 25 years. I believe, and as I say, maybe we'll get an expert on this because it could be of use to some of you out there. They went through MABS and they had a PIP who proposed to the company a payment structure. The company rejected that, and it's then through Awalia, I believe it is, that they took a case, and it's through that case that the judge fixed this rate. So a precedent has been set there, and as I say, some people out there may be able to benefit from that down the line. Who is to say? The Irish Sun this morning, state witness Jonathan Dowdall will have his appeal against the severity of his prison sentence for facilitating the murder of Kinahan Cartel member David Byrne heard next month. The Court of Criminal Appeal will hear his case on June 20. It's unlikely that the former Sinn Féin councillor, who's 44, will be in attendance for the hearing. He pleaded guilty to the Section 72 offence last October after a murder charge was dropped. And finally, the row over the Eurovision rumbles on. Wild Youth's frontman Conor O'Donoghue has blasted Eurovision organisers. The band crashed out of the semi-final stage in Liverpool on Tuesday night and failed to make it through to the grand final. Conor said in a deleted post, "The truth is they never gave Ireland a chance. Sorry if we let you down. We tried our best." You didn't let us down. You did try your best. I think, too, though, the organisers of that competition need to look at how it works in this day and age with social media and going viral and what have you. The bands that got through, even the ones that were a bit dodgy, right, they had huge followings and success on social media already. You know, how you use social media, how you try and get viral. They had done that. We didn't really do that. We had one video of them, not a very good video that was released, and also the performance on The Late Late Show. You know, not very Eurovision-y. Then you have other acts who make crazy videos or something catch your viral, potentially viral. It does go viral, and then they're known well in advance of the competition. We don't do that. We need to do that. But talk of bringing Johnny Logan back, I've got nothing but respect for Johnny Logan and what he's achieved. But to think that we go back to the 80s or 90s and try and get people who had success then to try and deliver success now is a bit naive as well. I think we're going to go back to the issue of safety at Maharabeg School in Manor Cunningham. If you're not familiar with it, it is a national school on the side of the road. It wasn't built on the side of the road. The road was built alongside it. We've covered on numerous occasions on this programme about the dangers there. Calls for additional parking, something that needs to be done before a life is lost. So Speedvan is parked close to that school, and now it's causing a controversy, and it is there presumably designed to slow traffic down to keep children safe. As I say, I don't really know what to make of this, because the safety of the children is paramount to me, but also I suppose how the rules of the road are enforced has to be fair as well. So the truth lies somewhere in between all of that. Colm's going to help us out here, I hope, Colm. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. I know this is something you've an opinion on. What's your view?
Good morning. No, I travel that road every day. Just the speed vans parked across from the school and outside a private residence and close to the wall. I have no issue with the drop in the speed limit, 60 kilometres an hour. I believe it should be in place at the school. It's just my concern, the position of the signage warning you off that, you know, the drop on the speed limit, particularly coming from the Newton Cunningham side. You come around a blind corner before you actually see the sign. And the sign's dropping from 100 kilometres, and then you have this beacon flashing at 60 kilometres. By the time cars get slowed down, they're already caught by that radar van, mm-hmm. which is like shooting fish in a barrel. But the thing I've noticed, it's on while the school's in place, Greg. Just in the morning when the school opens, they put it on. It's not on all day at the school, really. Mm-hmm. When they're leaving at the school in the evening, it can be turned on again. You know, and it is there for the safety of the children at the school. It's just coming from, I say, the Newton-Cunningham side. They drop from 100 kilometres to 60 kilometres, especially at rush hour in the morning. There's cars breaking. There's cars that are unfamiliar with it. One day I said to Caroline, I seen a lorry, a left-hand drive lorry, actually unfamiliar with the road. He actually crossed the carriageway. Thankfully, there's no oncoming traffic. They avoid colliding cars in front mm-hmm. of them. So I think if the council would move the sign back a couple of hundred yards around the corner and put the beacon on there, that people have no excuse. There's a sign at the school that'll sign for the two children holding hands. That's actually the side, the Newton-Cunningham side of that sign.
But that's
the wiring of a school there.
But at what point is the responsibility of the driver, though? Because you know yourself, Colm, it's not cars. The cars that are slamming the brakes on around that corner aren't the cars that are doing, you know, 90, 95 kilometres. Their car is probably coming around that corner at 120 kilometres per hour. That lorry you talk of, it shouldn't be too hard for a lorry to brake from 80 to 60. So what speed was he doing in the first instance? As you say, drivers knows there's a school there because the sign is on, you know, it's not once you come around the corner, they know it's there, but they keep the foot down and they fly around that corner. And then all of a sudden they're surprised by a flashing sign. You know, I mean, at what point do we have to say, well, you know what, if you're driving that fast that you have to slam your brakes on, you're going too fast anyway, and maybe you need a ticket to slow down.
Well, Greg, you're not dropping from 80 kilometres to 60, you're dropping from 100 to 60.
But you're probably dropping from 120 to 60.
In the space of a couple of yards.
Yeah, okay, I get you.
Well, there's people coming along there at 100. They're well aware of the school. They're on the road every day. They know the school's there and the sign's going to be on. But I think the warning sign for people is not, because there's a lot of strange cars and there are a lot of people on. There's a lot of traffic on that road, one of the busiest roads in the county. But I think the situation just to move the sign around the corner, because when you're coming from the other side, the Manor Cunningham side, you're in a big straight road. You can see the sign. You can clearly see the school sign beforehand of the two children. You know, you're giving the ample opportunity there. You should not be going over the limit. Mm-hmm. But if you're coming along at 100 kilometres around that road, and there's days that sign's been left on in Goldish. So you come around, and it's not in place. It's only in place while the school is school.
Yeah.
But if you come around that corner there, and you're coming along 100 kilometres an hour, next you've got this light flashing 60 kilometres an hour, and you're caught once you come around the corner. You've got a boy. You're getting a ticket.
I presume there is a distance from the school that you have to locate these signs, or else they lose their importance. Like, what I'm trying to get at here is, say you stop this, say you have that 60 kilometre sign around the corner, right? It does leave it quite some distance then from the school. Are drivers going to obey that speed limit passing the school for such a long period of time in terms of distance travelled?
I would say if you shifted it another 20 yards, which is not going to make that much of a difference. You know, but it's beyond the straight of the road. If you're coming from Newton-Cunningham side, you'll actually see the sign, or put a bigger warning sign, speed reduction ahead.
Do you not think that when you're coming up to that corner and you see the yellow triangular post with the school, that if you're driving and you're concentrating on what you're doing at that point, that you should not be lifting off the accelerator anyway?
Yeah, but I'll send a video to you later. There's where that sign is too, you know, it's on the trees.
Yeah. Oh, listen, come here.
You know, it needs to be.
I'm not against what you're saying, Colm. I'm just trying to tease it out. Going up Lurgy Brack, there is a 60 kilometre flashing light as well for that school, and it is, for the most part, covered by branches, right? So I believe that motorists deserve a fair crack of the whip. I'm not contradicting you, Colm. I'm just trying to tease out all the conversation that people might be having in their head listening to us this morning, you know. You're saying bring the sign 20 yards this way. So just the one thing I'm curious about this, Colm, I presume then that they can set these vans that the laser effectively only starts hitting the vehicle or registering the vehicle from the reduced speed limit. Is it because the 100 kilometre speed limit is in the line of sight of that speed van? Is it?
The 100 kilometre, the 60 kilometre sign, you mean?
No.
That's the line of sight.
Yeah, but does the van have sight of the road where people might be travelling legally at 100 kilometres per hour?
Well, if you're travelling 100 kilometres an hour legally, you are in that until you hit that sign.
Right, okay.
So that's what I'm saying. If he's catching anybody coming around that corner, they're not doing their job. They're shooting fish in a barrel because legally it's from the actual sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Between them two signs, you have to drive at 60 kilometres an hour.
For sure, but I'm just wondering if they must be able to calibrate the detection not to go as far as where it's legally 100, if that makes sense. But anyway, I'm probably confusing things. Stay where you are, Colin, because Kevin has been a victim of this. Kevin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
You were clocked by this speed van, were you?
No, I was travelling up on the 21st of April, and I was detected at 8:21 a.m. at going 71 kilometres at that corner.
Yeah.
Now, I came around the corner. There was no flashing lights on at that particular time. I have contacted the council, the Gardaí, and I've been given conflicting information. The RSA website states that we need a 42-metre reaction time in order to slow down safely. I know for a fact that there's no 42 metres between that sign that was not turned on and where that van was positioned, the detection of my speed, because I have received the GPS locations from the guards in relation to that. It's a money-making strategy. That's exactly what happened there that morning. If I was to break from 100 kilometres to 60 kilometres outside that school coming down that morning, there would have been a pile-up on the road.
Yeah.
It is more dangerous. It is more dangerous to do that than when I slowed down from the 100 to 71. A blind man would see that you were slowing down to be safe.
Now, Kevin, the sign wasn't on at all in your case.
No, it was not on at all in my case.
That's almost separate altogether.
And when I contacted Donegal County Council, they're responsible for the signs. The RSA are responsible for setting up the speed vans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the speed van was set up there yesterday morning. He pulled up at 16 minutes past 8. I'm sure by the time he does his checks and by the time everything happens, he's not ready to go at 20 past 8 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do now? I mean, if you don't pay up,
if I don't pay up, it's another 240. It's 240 euros plus the court appearance.
But you see, this is the thing they have us by the, you know, what's in that. You know, you really should probably go to court and argue your point. But do you want to roll those dice?
No, I don't want to take that chance and be prosecuted. Then if things don't, but I can't see how they can. If you look at the distance between the actual sign and where the van is parked, if you brake that fast, you're causing a pile-up. You're actually putting the people dropping children off there. Which, in fact, there's nobody dropping children off there at 20 past 8 because the principal himself of that school states they do not accept students until 8:40.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, the bylaws state that those speed restrictions are from 8:20 to 8:50. So there's only 10 minutes really of children being dropped off there where that speed limit should be effective.
But the sign, the key thing here though, the sign wasn't flashing.
The sign wasn't on. I know.
But this is even an extra level because effectively I would have thought if that sign's not flashing, there is no reduced speed
there's
limit
no speed,
because
yeah,
no one
no
could have knowledge as to when it should be
exactly.
on or not.
Exactly. And the school itself only received the notification of the bylaws on the 13th of March 2023 from Donegal County Council. And, you know, so the school's only recently aware of that speed restriction.
Yeah.
You know, so where do we go with this? I've been on to Donegal County Council at least 6 times in the past 2 days, and I'm getting nowhere with them because they're responsible for that light going on. I've asked for the GPS location on 4 occasions from Donegal County Council of that particular sign. They have failed to produce it to me. I have asked for the electronically logged turning on times of that light as well to see when that light was turned on that day. Because I was informed that that light, the turning on of that sign, is electronically logged.
Mm-hmm.
They're not giving it to me. 1 minute, I had 1 minute past the so-called bylaws. if I worked it out, I need 15.7 seconds to brake correctly from 100 kilometres to 60. And there's 8 seconds, I timed it this morning, 8 seconds from where that sign is to where that speed van was.
What you said, the RSA themselves say motorists need 42 metres to react.
It's on their website.
What would you say the distance actually is to react at this location?
It's 8 seconds.
Right, okay.
It's 8 seconds. And for if you do the maths with this, for you to reduce your speed from 100 kilometres an hour at that corner to 60, you need roughly in between 13 and 15 seconds
safely.
To do so safely.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
I get you. And especially if you've an Arctic or someone towing a car.
I'm only driving an ordinary car,
Okay.
I'm only driving an ordinary car.
It's a tough one, Kevin, because, you know, like, maybe the fact that you can't get that information from the local authority at this point is part of your defence. Because, I mean, there's no doubt, Kevin, it sounds like you could very clearly articulate your argument in front of a judge. But again, it's you that has to roll those dice, and I probably wouldn't myself either. But
could you put the question out to Donegal County Council?
Of course, we will.
Yeah, no.
Hey, Kevin, when we're talking about this, that's all part of the process to get that information from them. That's what we do here. So we've put an inquiry in with the council, and we're going to try and get to the bottom of it, because obviously we want to make sure that everyone attending that school is safe. But you don't do
100%.
That. You don't do that by putting other road users in danger either. That's not the best way to solve a problem.
The school itself will not accept students up until 22:09 in the morning. I found that out myself. So why are those lights on at 20? Why are those lights supposed to be on at 8:20, causing a danger? And they come on at 8:20 apparently straight away. They don't, because I passed it at 8:20 last week. They weren't on.
Right. Okay.
So why is that bylaw in place at that particular region, at that particular area, from 8:20? Number one, it makes no sense. And another thing I would like to know, is that bylaw just for that particular road, the N13?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And not to mention too that, and I've mentioned this on this program for many years, these lights continue to operate during Easter holidays, often during summer holidays, not necessarily at that school, but at various locations I've seen it. Kevin, keep us updated. We'll try and get some information. Let us know what you decide to do. Colm, I mean, there's a Kevin, I think, has really strengthened your point there, because he's been a victim of it. And because he has been, he's been able to dig a bit deeper in terms of, you know, stopping distance, bylaws, what the RSA suggests. Definitely requires further investigation, Colm, then.
Yeah, it definitely does. As I say, you know, the safety of the kids and the staff and the parents, even at the school, is paramount, but also all road users using that route. And, you know, I say there's nobody arguing the point that there shouldn't be a 60-kilometre speed at the school. But as I said before, like Kevin's told me, I said electronically, it's on days that the school's closed as well. You've mentioned that as well, the fact that, you know, these lights in different locations let up when, you know, schools is closed. The local authority sets the bylaws, and they have to review that bylaw within 2 years, and then within every 5 years. So, like, put an appeal out to some of the councillors there too. They, you know, look at this.
Yeah.
Especially the council's elected members on that area. You know, speak to the likes of the school, because it's obvious the school is concerned as well, because they're just getting drip feeds of information.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but safety of everybody is paramount, and say, I have no objections. I don't think anybody's objections with a speed limit being reduced outside the school. It's just the sighting of it and the dangers causing the road users and everybody along that stretch of road.
All right, good points well made, Colm. Thank you very much for that. And to Kevin as well, as I say, every day is a learning day, and I feel, and I'm sure that means all the listeners too, have a better understanding of what's going on here too. And it's clear that something needs to be done to ensure that we are providing a safe environment for all road users. Okay, Colm, thank you.
Good morning.
Take care. Good morning to you, and Kevin, thanks for that as well. Right, now we're joined on the programme by journalist Sean McCorrick. We're going to talk about that story we referenced in the papers, that a Garda is to face a criminal investigation. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. A Garda is to face a criminal prosecution over his driving in relation to an incident in which three men were killed in a collision on the N7 in Dublin 2 years ago. Sean, thank you very much for taking the call this morning. And what is the background to this case?
Yes, Greg. Some of your listeners might remember it was a case that got a lot of publicity at the time. back in July of 2021. Three men, Dean Maguire, Carl Freeman and Graham Taylor, who were known members of a criminal gang based in the Talla area, were killed when their car while they were fleeing from Gardaí, BMW car crashed with a truck and exploded and ignited. All three were killed instantly when they were driving down the wrong side of the carriageway between City West and Baldonnell, the turnoff for the aerodrome there in South Dublin. I suppose a lot of people would also have been aware of the case. It garnered a lot of publicity and indeed notoriety a few days later at the funeral of Dean Maguire, when there was, at the Requiem Mass in the church in Talla, there was what I suppose might be called a celebration of his criminal lifestyle, when some of the offertory gifts brought to the altar included kind of tools used by burglars, such as a screwdriver and a torch. And there was a lot of, shall we say, colourful language used in some of the eulogies by people in relation to Dean Maguire. And it really did, it was seen by an awful lot of people as, just totally unbecoming conduct at a funeral and in a church. And I know the priest at the time said that it was he'd never seen, had threatened to halt proceedings if greater respect wasn't shown, and he described it as the most disturbing funeral he had ever overseen. So I think, arising out of that, because they were being pursued by Gardaí at the time, the case naturally fell to being investigated by the Garda Ombudsman.
And fast forward then to this inquest, and did the news that the DPP had recommended a charge, which we don't know yet, against a guard, come as a surprise? Because presumably, you know, the families of the victims were hoping that there would be answers, and now this has been deferred somewhat. So how did events unfold in the coroner's court?
Yeah, so the inquest has come up for repeated brief hearings over the past 2 years, and the family have been pressing all the time for updates on the progress of the GSOC investigation. And there was another hearing there about 2 weeks ago when we learned for the first time that GSOC had submitted their file to the DPP in December, and so that the decision was awaited on whether there would be any prosecution or not. And at the time, GSOC officials had promised that they'd come back to the coroner's court as soon as they were aware of any decision taken by the DPP. And that happened on Tuesday night. So we learned for the first time, and I suppose it is a surprise development. I certainly know it has caused a certain amount of consternation amongst Gardaí, and judging from some online reaction among the general public as well, that a guard might face a prosecution arising out of, an act performed in the course of their duty. But we got the details yesterday that, some of the detail there, the notice that a Garda is to be face prosecution arising out of the circumstances of the three men's death.
Now, you mentioned Dean Maguire, the others that died, Carl Freeman, Graham Taylor. Carl Freeman's father expressed his displeasure with the situation. He wanted the nature of the charge to be made public. He didn't want to subsequently read it in a newspaper. But all that being said, that the inquest was adjourned once again.
Yes, and not just the family of Carl Freeman, the other two families were also were represented by solicitors, and they all argued quite strongly that there was no legal prohibition why GSOC should not disclose the actual specific offence that this Garda is to face. They obviously weren't seeking the name of the Garda involved, but the nature of the offence. And under a lot of questioning, the GSOC official who did not want to reveal the specific offence on the basis that the Garda in question had not been formally notified of it yet, but he did reveal, as I say, under questioning, that it did relate to the Garda's driving on the night in question.
Yeah, and finally, Sean, there's quite a process to go through here, so maybe we can't even speculate as to the consequences of this, but I presume the likes of the Garda Representative Association and even maybe Active Gardaí, who might find themselves in something of a similar situation currently, will be watching on with great interest along with the general public to see what kind of a precedent this sets or even how to react to it, because I presume they can't really react to it until we know the nature of the charge and what the consequences of that might be.
Absolutely, Greg. I sense that, as I say, from just one or two calls last night, I sense there is a deep unease amongst Gardaí and maybe the Garda Representative Association about the precedent that they set and whether it places a question mark over what Gardaí, in terms of pursuing criminals, and as I say, in the case of these three men, they were well-known criminals, so there was a good reason to be probably stopping questioning them. I do know that there are a lot of protocols around the use of blue lights by Gardaí that they need to follow. One of the issues that may arise in this case, and it is an element of speculation, but I know there are rules about when a car fleeing from Gardaí goes down the wrong side of a carriageway or a motorway. There was another inquest recently where a similar situation arose, and in such circumstances, Gardaí normally pull back just because of the whole public safety issue that would surround a car going the wrong way down a motorway. Whether that arose in this case or not, I suspect will emerge in the fullness of time. It might be a separate issue, but it is one area that possibly arises in the case, because we do know for certain that the vehicle driven by the three men went down the wrong side of the N7 and went into a fireball after it crashed with a truck, killing the three men instantly to such a degree that their bodies had to be identified by DNA samples.
Okay, Sean, thanks for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. That is journalist Sean McCarrick there outlining the details of that case, which a lot of people will be watching with great interest. Now, dyslexic students in junior cycle and leaving cert should be given more time to complete their state exams. Despite accommodations during class time, those with the condition are not given any additional time during exams. The Dyslexia Association says it puts them at a distinct disadvantage. Donald Ewing is Head of Education and Policy at the Dyslexia Association of Ireland and joins us on the programme now. Welcome back to the show. Donald, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, this is not just a solo, although you've got the mandate to do it, by the Dyslexia Association of Ireland. A lot of people have signed a petition backing this call.
Yes, in the first 24 hours we had 7,000 signatures. I think the total at the moment is well over 12,000. So there's a great groundswell of support for this accommodation, which is long overdue, really.
To help us understand, why might a student with dyslexia require more time than a child with that doesn't have it?
So if you have dyslexia, you would have difficulties with extended reading and extended writing, and also processing information. So in a pressured environment, which brings additional challenges, individuals with dyslexia often struggle to demonstrate their understanding under those conditions. And in other jurisdictions and at third level, we have what is seen as a reasonable accommodation to give them a small amount of additional time so they can demonstrate understanding and work to their potential.
So logically then, if that's how you're taught, that should be how you're tested then. I mean, it's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yes. The State Exam Commission's guidance around this does talk about trying to mirror the normal way of working. It uses that phrase in their guidance. What we need is to see an enhancement to that scheme to reflect the additional time that students with dyslexia work under. And again, it is available in other countries. If you look to our neighbours, the UK offers 25% extra time, Italy 30%, France 33%. It's available at all colleges and universities in Ireland. And also with high-stakes professional exams, extra time is the norm. The outlier is really the second-level examinations here.
Are in not being accommodated, is there not an argument that this is discrimination on the grounds of, on one of the grounds that this might fall under?
Yes, well, under equalities legislation, the kind of legal test really is the body concerned offering reasonable accommodations? And often the kind of flip to that is it unreasonable to entertain this whatsoever? So we would say it does potentially, certainly it seems like a reasonable accommodation. It's successfully implemented elsewhere, and it could be felt to be discriminatory for a person who has an identified need and indeed legally has an identified disability under the law.
I suspect, Donald, that this is not necessarily something the powers that be are against doing, but it's too complicated. So what we'll do is just not do it. Too complicated to try and accommodate a perhaps 1 in 10 or a cohort of students in a different way. You know what I'm on about? I would say it's not the will. I'd say it's the way. And we're just probably any other conversation is nonsense because it probably just comes down to that.
Yeah, I don't think too complicated is a good defence under equalities legislation.
No, I know, but you know, that's why that would never be said. So we'll talk about everything else except the fact that they don't know how to administer it.
Well, there was an expert advisory group that the State Exam Commission have referenced today in the national press, and they suggest that it was quite tricky to implement this. Curiously, that group met 25 years ago. So I think we can probably look at that again. It's a reasonable amount of time has passed. This was a view that was taken in the last millennium. Also, I think if we look at other jurisdictions and look at other settings here in Ireland, how they do it reasonably, safely, with sort of appropriate checks and balances, I think it is very much something that can be achieved without too much difficulty.
I think for most young people, the most stressful time of their lives is exams. And I think as we get older, then we realise how perhaps not important it is as we first thought. But for you have to put yourself in a young person's shoes. It seems to be the be all and end all. So any extra challenges or any extra pressure against any group of young people, it's unfair. It's putting them and their families through great distress.
Yes, I mean, the state examination terminal exams are very stressful for all of us. I do wonder if we might look back at how we do this in maybe 10, 15 years and say, why did we continue to do that for so long? If you listen to yourself and colleagues in the next month or so, we'll regularly hear top people talking about small t trauma in exams. And often those are people that did quite well in their exams. If you think about the recurring nightmares that many people have, what's top of the list walking into an exam hall? If we throw in the additional challenges of dyslexia into that, I think we should make every reasonable attempt to try to alleviate some of the pressures that arise as part of a disability.
Yeah, and as you probably know, Donald, but much better than I, that nightmare of walking in. But it's also the weeks and months in advance, isn't it, that will probably hinder people's ability to learn what they need to learn as well.
Yes, indeed. And I think there's some evidence from other countries that where extra time is offered, it's not always all used. But having that assurance that you won't be under the same time pressure as everybody else. And it's worth remembering, some people say, well, equality is treating everyone the same. That's a misunderstanding about equality. Equality is giving people what they reasonably need. Now, I wear glasses here for short-sightedness. It's a reasonable accommodation. It's my normal way of working. No one's going to deprive me of that on an exam day. And I know I'll be afforded this accommodation. It's a crude analogy, but actually, if you think about it, the types of supports that children with dyslexia need, they need to be assured about that. They need to be given what they need, and they need to be given it so that they can succeed and show off their potential. Because as you say, later in life, perhaps we have a slightly more sanguine approach to exam.
And I think the fact that during the learning process, extra time is given, it seems very unfair then that that's not followed through down to exam time. McCullough says, even though my son has dyslexia, he doesn't get an automatic waiver to spell check. You have to be assessed before the exam again, which they believe is very unfair. It was stressful enough the first time round labelling him. Now we have to do it again before his junior cert. Is that something you hear from parents a lot?
Yes, indeed. And we're actually meeting with colleagues from the State Exam Commission at the end of the month, and we're really looking forward to positive engagement with them. Extra time is only one of the things on our agenda. The way that we assess young people for the other types of accommodations that are currently available is not ideal in many ways also. So we need to try and improve how we have. There have been some improvement over the last decade, but we certainly can improve how we the types of accommodations in, In particularly, some of the technological accommodations that we're using on our devices and laptops on a regular daily basis as our normal way of working, some of those text-to-speech and speech-to-text functions are not afforded to children in exams, or the ones that they're used to using are not afforded to them at all in exams. So again, there's a few things on the agenda for that meeting.
Yeah, I think it's very much in the state's interest that everybody achieves their maximum potential. We don't want to lose great brains for no good reason at all, do we? We end up, you know what I mean? So it's very much in the state's interest to look at this. The petition, over 10,000 have signed it already. Is it still open at Dyslexia Yep. Association of Ireland's website?
Absolutely. On our website and also through our social media, you can find a link to that. I think we're at 12,500 as we speak.
Great,
so
okay.
It's a very impressive response from our members and people who are often people who are not directly affected, but yeah. feel that it's a fair approach to take.
That's a really significant number of people to be motivated to do this. I think so. When you think of the cohort of students and then break it down, it's a real strong representation. Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning. Donald Ewing, Head of Education and Policy at the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, 08660 25,000 if you wish to get involved in that conversation. Greg, Ballybuffet is a gridlock with traffic due to the roadworks this morning. Make people aware in case they need to leave extra time. And I think for the next 5 or 6 weeks, that is going to be the case. There's no other real way around it with the level of work that they're doing, that one lane has to be shut down at the moment. And at the moment, outside of the peak times, the system works kind of well. But of course, there's a huge bottleneck at certain times there. Greg, you can't cut hedges at this time of the year in case you disturb birds' nests. Many chicks have just hatched at this time, of course. And it was a jokey throwaway remark to Lee just at the top of the show. I don't have any hedges. And my word, if he hasn't done those hedges yet at this point, he might as well leave them next year, and he certainly must have to. There's a speed van in Glenty's Main Street at least once a week outside the old Limelight nightclub. I thought these speed vans were meant to be in black spots where collisions have happened or high-risk areas. To my knowledge, there shouldn't be one on the Main Street. It's tax collection, plain and simple. That comes in from Charlie in Glenty's. And this one also pulls in opposite the church or chapel in Donegal Town. And it is, if you're looking to do people, it's a cracker of a spot. Because you come around a corner and both ends a sweeping corner, and I would say they clean up there. I genuinely would believe that they do. Right, okay. Just time for a quick one with Roisin. Roisin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, thanks, Roisin. And just give us all the details of the Redress Focus Group's meeting just before 10, if you don't mind, Roisin.
No problem, Greg. So the meeting is on tonight at 7 p.m. in On Green Inn Hotel in Burt. And we'd really love to encourage all people to come along, whether they volunteer with the initiative or not. We'd love people to come along and feel supported and hear the updates from all the focus groups. And if you want to volunteer, of course, come ahead. We really do need a lot more volunteers to come on board and help us throughout all the 15 groups. But essentially, this is a support meeting, and that's what initially we wanted to start, and it grew and grew. So it's going great. And I know you've heard some updates from the banking and insurance focus group this week. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a lot more on that. So yeah, 7 o'clock and On Greening this evening.
Okay. And we're due a longer chat, Roisin, where we can see where we're making progress in these various elements of this campaign. But for now, tonight, support and update meeting at a Green Inn Hotel at 7 p.m. As Roisin said, it's about support and getting together and getting updates and what have you, but also too, you might want to get involved in one of the strands of the campaign. There are 15 groups, and the more people involved, the less pressure on particular individuals there is. Okay, Roisin, hopefully there's a great turnout this evening. Thanks for your time.